You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Gods Must Be Crazy was a smash hit movie that came out of South Africa in 1980. The director was Yami Uss. It became a cult hit in the USA and was popular in Japan and at least 40 countries in Europe and South America. I remember seeing it on Wakefield Street in the city as well. It begins with a tribe of bushmen living in the Kalahari Desert, taking only what they need from the land and living a life of joy, simplicity, and no crime. One day, as a small private plane flies overhead, the pilot casts out of the window an empty Coke bottle, very socially responsible, which lands unbroken. Finding it, the bushmen think it is a gift from the gods because it has so many uses. It's a musical instrument. It's a pattern maker. It's a fire starter. A cooking utensil. And it's an object of bitter controversy, as the gods sent only one. Soon, everyone wants to use it for their own purpose. Anger and violence consume the people, and so the elders confer. They decide to get rid of it, but their attempts fail. Gravity defies efforts to throw it away. It is buried, but a warthog digs it up and a child brings it back to camp. It is decided that that's my attempt at saying their language, will take it to the edge of the world, which by their calculations is a 20-day walk, to chuck it over to get rid of it once and for all. In come the other characters, a bumbling biologist, an awfully pretty teacher, an indecisive back-and-forward jeep with no brakes, a mob of nasty guerrillas being chased by an equally nasty government troops, and it all has to combine. The biologist has to pick up the teacher, falls in love, and is rendered speechless and incompetent, which results in some of the best visual comedy jeep jokes you will ever see. The guerrillas kidnap the teacher and the kids. Our bushland hero gets hungry and paralysed. A goat is shot and imprisoned. The biologist mechanic speaks the bushman's clicky language and realizes that the jail sentence will be a death sentence, so a rescue is plotted and executed. She cross-dresses as a woman and tranquilizes the gorillas and rescues the teacher and the kids. Romance blossoms between the teacher and the biologist. Meanwhile, reaches God's window in South Africa, and believing it to be the end of the world, casts the Coke bottle into the clouds below and returns home to a happy ending. Is this just a comedy? Rewatch it. Your kids will love the slapstick and pick up on the superiority of the values of the Bushmen over the bumbling whites. Given that it's now 2019, you may be a little put off by the myth of the noble savage, the patronizing tone of the narrator, the apparent denial of apartheid. Or you may perceive it as a subtle attack on the short-sighted South African racial policies of 1980. Interestingly, it was very popular with black audiences in West Africa. It is no accident that each of the major characters says, with impatience and always in a comic context, "I don't want to talk about it." Cast your mind back to 1980. And it could be that Yami Uss is characterizing the attitude of enlightened citizens, troubled by the system of apartheid, but incapable of taking any effective stand against it. "I don't want to talk about it. It runs through the film like a musical theme.
Thanks, John. That was lovely. Now, December has a fifth Sunday, and it's not easy to find a service leader. We've got a lot of volunteers, but then we give our regular minister, Rob McPherson, time off pulpit now. So the easy thing to do was to pop my name down, and then I realised I'd done this around New Year's Eve before, several times. In the past, I've talked about the perils of making New Year resolutions, pie crust promises made to be broken, with a negative effect on your confidence and self-esteem. And in another, I reflected on the Roman god Janus, who has one face looking forward to the future and one looking back to the past. And then I had a happy thought. Janus, God, gods, the gods must be crazy. Thanks, John, for the reading, which was part synopsis, part review, and hopefully part nostalgia, and crucially, food for thought. So let's start with a definition of gods from Quora, a question and answer forum created and used by people with no particular qualifications whatsoever. Gods. Juvenile myths created by primitive cultures to explain entirely natural phenomena. Later hijacked by nefarious opportunists that founded and organized religious cults. The essential element of dogma based on indoctrination systems designed to gain power, accumulate wealth, and instill personal prejudices. Like the author of the definition in Quora, modern Buddhists and many modern Unitarians don't have much truck with God. But I do. I've thought a lot about God, off and on, since the age of 11, mostly off, admittedly. I opined to my mother that God was a thoroughly bad lot, because he was always right, immortal, infallible, all-powerful, and nevertheless chose to inflict much suffering and judgment upon us all. Well, she stopped me in my tracks with the observation that it all depended on what you believed. Did God create people, or did people create God? Well, it was pretty obvious if she was letting God off the hook for inflicting suffering and judgment that she believed the latter. So that's going to be my starting point for today. People created God. Why? Is it problematic? Why should we care? Well, most people in the world are not atheists or non-theists or Westerners. And actually, some of who are don't really act as if they are. I like the movie. I like the Norse gods. I like the Greek gods and the Roman ones, especially in Holst's Planet Suite. Thanks, Brendan. And the Indian ones are innumerable and fascinating. I think it was Voltaire who said, if God did not exist, then it would have been necessary to invent him. Let's agree, him or her, him and her. For the ancient Greeks, the gods were a way of making sense of the world, how it began, how the seasons give way one to the other, why some people are lucky and others are not, what happens when we die. A family of gods resided on Mount Olympus, and every aspect of life was looked after by them. There were gods in charge of the sea, whipping up storms and frightening sailors. Others ripened the harvest. Some shot arrows into the stoniest heart. Others helped to win wars, whatever. From our lofty, educated perspective, we can discount this as we understand much from physics and astronomy about seasons and weather and climate. We don't need God to explain the natural world. But there is more. Far from being perfect and full of wisdom, the gods in heaven were just as silly as us. They squabbled, fell in love, played tricks on each other and on people in their care. Thanks for the Midas story, Christine. They chased pretty women. They helped handsome heroes. They disguised themselves and their motives, jealousy, greed, loneliness, spite, anger. So revisiting stories, poems, and plays about the gods helps us explore human nature, and hence ourselves. The response to climate change is not determined by physics, mathematics, and meteorology. It's determined by human nature, with its ability to deny, believe contradictions, insist on being right, or greedy, or altruistic, to look backwards or forwards like Janus. Now, who is the most popular god of all? The Indians will tell you Ganesh. Ganesh has an elephant's head and its image is worldwide. Why so popular? Well, he clears the way through obstacles. Can you picture an elephant clearing its way through a plantation? Well, people pray to Ganesh whenever they face seemingly insurmountable odds or problems. Ganesh could well be the god for you to emulate or seek assistance from if you're beginning a new enterprise, a project during which you must apply effort and attention. Kali, interestingly enough, turns up at weddings. My friend Gunhild went to a work colleague's wedding in Delhi and was more than amused to see a ring of pink washing up gloves, apparently dripping with blood, attached to a dancer's skirt. The dancer was Kali, goddess of destruction, wrathful to her enemies and fiercely protective and loyal to her devotees. She's even depicted cutting off Shiva's head. Why? Well, her traditional role is to play humanity's greatest enemy, the ego. When all else fails, call upon the wrathful mother. Just think about it. How does our ego interfere when we want to change direction, change goals, priorities, and make way for a new way of living? Hence her presence at weddings. Now, I was brought up Methodist, and so all these gods were just a little bit of nonsense, aren't they? And they were immortal. But were they? The Norse gods weren't immortal. Jack Kirby, American comics artist, depicts Asgard as a towering science fiction city full of imposing buildings and dangerous edifices. Odin is wise and noble, and Loki is a creature of sheer mischief, sardonic, horn-helmeted. Thor is blonde, handsome, muscle-bound. But if you go to Roger Lancelin Green's Myths of the Norsemen, over which I pored every summer holidays during heat waves at Auntie Effie's, Asgard is a frozen wasteland with a few buildings. Odin is not gentle, wise, and irascible, but brilliant, unknowable, and dangerous. Mighty Thor is as strong as before, but as thick as a brick. And Loki is, well, not evil, but complicated. The Norse gods come with their own doomsday. The twilight of the gods, the end of it all, Ragnarok. They were to battle the frost giants and they were all going to die. Tragic heroes. But they live on in our imaginations and in the names of the days of the week. So we have it. The gods are not necessarily immortal. They are not necessarily singular or plural. Despite learning in proddy Sunday school there's only one God, the Bible itself tells us that God is a jealous God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. In other words, there were other gods, rivals, competitors. If we look in our Unitarian, non-literal way at gods of this and that in our lives, which do we elevate and worship, and which do we deny, hide, or destroy? And why can we all name more he-gods than she-gods? My favourite British actress, without a shadow of a doubt, is Fiona Shaw. She's Irish and works from London these days. Now, for years, she was asked to play Hamlet, but the more she looked into it, the more she felt a bloke would be better in a play about a bloke and a bloke's father and his fraught relationship with his mum and his girlfriend. And so she didn't accept it. But what she did accept was the role of Richard II. Normally, he's played as a very effeminate man. Well, Shaw did not have to waste effort on the feminine side. That came free, gratis, and for nothing. Now, she's very tall, 53 kilograms, so the female shape was easy to disguise with binding under the costume. Deborah Warner directed. The critics were divided and wrote reviews so bad she took to her bed for 2 days. But it remains the role of which she's most proud. Why? Well, it turns out the French and the Germans and the Irish and most everybody loved it. The haters were those Brits who elevated the histories to prayer status and wanted them performed accordingly. The film made later is brilliant, and you can see how it works. At the start, Shaw is not playing a man. She plays a god, who at the end realizes he's not a god, but a man. Now, this is a trajectory with which many of us need to negotiate as our dreams go from the divine and adolescent and improbable to the real, adult, attainable and achievable ones in daily life. Finally, apart from not being infallible or immortal, the gods are also not necessarily deities or divinities. I would like to read you Psalm 82. God takes his stand in the court of heaven to deliver judgment among the gods themselves. How long will you judge unjustly and show favor to the wicked? You ought to give judgment to the weak and the orphan and see right down to the destitute and downtrodden. You ought to rescue the weak and poor and save them from the clutches of wicked men. But you know nothing. You understand nothing, and you walk in the dark while earth's foundations are giving way. This is my sentence. Gods you may be, sons of you, all of a high god, yet you shall die as men die. Princes fall, every one of them, and so shall you. Arise, O God, and judge the earth, for thou dost pass all nations through thy sieve. Now, this was the psalm that Jesus quoted in his defense against the blasphemy charges slapped on him by authorities when he claimed to be the Son of God, if not actually God. In the psalm, the word Elohim, which usually refers to the one true God, refers instead to judges, people with authority over other human beings. They wield power as civil authorities and derive that position from God. Jesus reminds the authorities that influential men can be thought of as gods and are expected to rule with impartiality and true justice, because in the end, they will be judged accordingly. Well, Jesus certainly claimed to be God. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. I and the Father are one. He, him, his. What would his mother have had to say about that? Shall we look in the Testament of Mary, a short novella by Colm Tóibín? Mary was not impressed with the ruddy sheep. He gathered around him, I said, a group of misfits who were only like children themselves, or men without fathers, or men who could not look a woman in the eye. Not one of them was normal, I said, and I watched him push his plate of half-eaten food towards me as though he were a child in a tantrum. Yes, I said, my son gathered misfits, although he, despite everything, was not a misfit, and he could have done anything. He could have been quiet even. He had that capacity also, the one that is rarest. He could have spent time alone with ease. He could look at a woman as though she were his equal, and he was grateful. Good, normal, intelligent. And he used all of it, I said, so he could lead a group of men from place to place. I have no time for misfits, I said. But if you put two of you together, you will get not only foolishness and the usual cruelty, you will also get a desperate need for something else. Gather together, misfits, I said, pushing his plate back to him, and you will get anything at all. Fearlessness, ambition, and before it dissolves or grows, it will lead to what I saw and what I live with now. Well, I thought to myself, that's enough food for thought for Sunday. On balance, I think the gods are crazy. When people act like gods, they act crazy. When I behave like a god, all wise, all knowing, I'm as crazy as. On the other hand, to live in a world in which you recognize and name gods, maybe you are not crazy at all. However, I'm sure you'll all come to your own conclusions and make your own arrangements with the gods and goddesses you meet in this world, or not, as the case may be. Happy New Year for this coming Wodan's Day.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.